I'm so proud of our kids, the coaches, just everybody. They believed. They believed.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Everyone was retaining lawyers. I mean, there's like, there's no time for
Russ Dellinger.
The fabric of the garbage bag was Louie.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I'm the cock of the walk, baby.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And it's really nothing more American than hearing a Mid-American Conference coach weep with joy and pride over his players defeating Notre Dame in South Bend.
A beautiful moment.
I'm Dan Wetzel, and I approve this message. Sorry, Notre Dame, for your pain, but watching Thomas Hammack, the head coach at Northern Illinois, pull off this 16-14 upset. It was classic college football. No one's really watching the game. And then all of a sudden, like, everyone's texting, everything's on social. Get to NBC. They get a tough spot. It's like, oh no, Notre Dame's going to have their chance. All right. Can they pull it out? Fine. Can the Irish shake down the Thunder, win one for the Gipper, whatever. He called a nice defensive. Whoever called it, NIU called a very nice blitz on Riley Leonard on that final drive. They forced the 62-yarder. Of course, that gets blocked because you got to kick that thing at quite a plane. I don't know what the 62-yard, the chances that was going in, but whatever. They tried it, didn't make it. NIU wins. Maction, Joy and DeKalb testing the whiskey reserves of that beautiful city up there on the near border of Wisconsin. Meanwhile, tears all over South Bend as the Irish are crushed, and who knows what it does to their season. 1 week after flying high, and now we're back to the unfortunately recurring dilemma of Marcus Freeman, which is, how do we keep losing these games? Patrick Forty, thoughts?
Oh, boy. I was very happy for Thomas Hammack and all the Northern Illinois Huskies. That team, I've been looking at the roster here in preparation for the show, and I mean, it is kind of what you would think it is. It's like 80 guys from the Midwest and a handful of JUCOs, and then an interesting bunch of guys from Georgia. They must have somebody who can recruit Georgia. But you know, they've put it together. They kept it together. I have to say, their star player, running back Ontario Brown from Savannah, Georgia, who had an 83-yard touchdown reception in the game, he's a four-year guy at Northern Illinois, including he ran for 1,300 yards last year. You know people wanted him in the portal. He stayed, and he gets to win in Notre Dame Stadium. So just thrilled for them and everybody in DeKalb. Got to give a shout out to Donna Turner, the sports information director at Northern Illinois. He's been there for 18 years. That's doing some work, man. 18 years as an SID in the MAC, and she gets to publicize the biggest win in school history. So hats off to them, and then we will come back and bayonet the hell out of Notre Dame here.
I mean, they did make a Orange Bowl. They had a perfect season 1 year, didn't they?
Yeah, that was a while ago.
I mean, yeah. That was
20,
pretty big.
25 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Second biggest win.
Or something. I mean, well, who did they beat to go to the Orange Bowl? They didn't beat anybody.
Well, they beat everybody, right?
Well, yeah.
I don't know. They got to go to the Orange Bowl, lose like $8 million. It's a great moment. I remember doing a story about it. They had to keep it secret. The athletic department was going to have a party. They knew they were going to the Orange Bowl, but they had to keep it a secret. But one of their employees went and bought all the oranges at a grocery store in DeKalb. And they were like, that might have, did anyone see you?
Ring
like,
some alarm bells.
Yeah, like the whole cart was full with oranges. Like, we need a lot of oranges. Someone go get a lot of oranges. And it was supposed to be secret. Then they were worried it was going to get tipped off somehow. Like this is a state secret anyway, but yes, other than that, it was a great day for Northern Illinois. Go Huskies.
They were, it was 2012. They were 12-1. Their best win that year was against Kent State. So,
I mean, you know, come on, the flashes. All right.
They beat Kansas. And
you're right. You are correct. I am incorrect.
Yeah, no, you know, that win, of course, I like, when I see something like that happen, I immediately go to, man, maybe the G5 isn't dead yet.
Not dead yet.
We talk a lot about the split, the growing divide resource-wise between the P4 and the G5 and the future and all this stuff, but maybe not yet. There's some life in the G5, and we saw a few G5 teams give some others a run. Obviously, right down the road in Penn State, that was a little scary for a little while. So maybe, the way to do it, Pat, I think, mentioned the veteranness of some of these players. That's the key. And that's the key we see in basketball, too, right? In March Madness is the senior-laden 4-, 5-, 6-year players on a team that has the advantage over maybe the more talented but younger teams. And we maybe that's part of what we saw here. I mean, the other part, obviously, is an inept Notre Dame offense, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Well, we'll get to. I mean, let me just. The talent works both ways. And you talk to MAC coaches, you talk to Sun Belt coaches. They're not even recruiting high school kids really anymore, very much, because they can get the kid that couldn't crack the top three on a junior who played in the Big Ten or played in the ACC or somewhere and couldn't crack the third on the depth chart, and that kid still shows up like physically ready. So. You know, look at, are we going to have a lot of these? No. Are we going to have as many as before? Maybe not, but it can still happen. And some of these teams can get the right guys. But look, congrats to the Huskies. At this point, they have the inside track on the Group of Five championship, right? If they can win out. Now, they still have to go to NC State. But we will see whether they're good enough to do all that. Beating Notre Dame on one day, it's very, very hard to win all your games. I don't care where you're playing, what league you're playing in. So we'll hold off. But obviously, if you're looking at group of like the MAC was not one of those leagues, you're like, hey, they could have a group of five champ in a playoff. But hey, who knows? But look at the story here is Notre Dame. Notre Dame was in the driver's seat to make the playoffs. It was all set up. Marcus Freeman had this killer defense. Riley Leonard was this gritty player. They go down to College Station. They win. They are obviously a better, more talented, deeper everything team than Northern Illinois, the same way they were against Marshall, the same way they were against Stanford in past years. Yet here we are once again with another one of these losses. I watched Marcus Freeman's press conference and, you know, he said we've been here before. Obviously, no one's happy about it. No one does it. But what is going on? Where this happens three straight years.
Yeah. Real quick. Northern Illinois has only got like five or six guys that you would say transferred down. And really only one of them, I think, that played a major role in that game Saturday. And that was running back Gavin Williams, who came from Iowa.
Pat's crushing my Northern Illinois takes. I got to say it. Fair enough.
No, they got a lot of guys that they recruited and then some jukes. And, you know, they put it together interesting.
You get to DeKalb. You just don't leave.
Yeah. I guess not.
You just don't leave.
the paradise of Northern Illinois there.
You sit there, watch the sunset over the smokestacks. You can't leave. You can't pry a kid out. Just be like, hey, we're Miami, Florida. We'll give you a bunch of money. Hold on, brother. I'm up here. All right.
Yeah.
Would somebody get to Notre Dame, please?
Yes, I'll get to Notre Dame.
God, the ratings are dropping by the second. We're talking about Northern Illinois.
It's an atrocity if you're Notre Dame. I mean, it's a complete atrocity. It's probably a worse loss than the Marshall loss was. It's in the absolutely in the running for worst losses in school history. You're 28.5 point favorite. And here's the thing. So the Marshall game in 2022 was Marcus Freeman's third game as head coach, second of that year. He was the interim emergency kind of coach for the bowl game. Then they open with a slobber knocker against Ohio State and lost, and then they lose to Marshall. At that point, you're like, okay, rookie head coach, in a little over his head, didn't have, you know, put everything into the Ohio State game, and they weren't ready, you know, the next week. Not good at all, but explainable. This is bad. This is your third season at Notre Dame. You can't be losing this game. And they lost it pretty damn well, fair and square. They were outgained by over 100 yards. Northern Illinois certainly deserved to win the game. And if you're Notre Dame, your offense stinks. Riley Leonard so far has done very little for you. You're not making enough plays. They have no explosiveness. And if you look, this is under Freeman, seventh time they have scored 21 or fewer points. They're 1-6 in those games. They've gone out and tried to portal the quarterback situation 2 years in a row. Sam Hartman was pretty good last year, but he wasn't a savior. Riley Leonard so far, pretty bad and not a savior. And Marcus Freeman's had too many bad losses and too many games where they're looks like they're still playing the last game, where you win a big one and then you turn around and you lay an absolute egg. So he's immediately, I'm sorry, he's on the hot seat.
It is bizarre. When you look at his tenure, you look at some of the wins they had against ranked teams, even on the road, and then the losses at home. It doesn't make sense. And I don't know if it's – obviously they've shown in recruiting rankings and in some of these victories, right, that they have the talent and the ability to win big games. But they're losing games that complete – head scratchers. His first year, they beat a ranked BYU team, I think in a neutral field, maybe in Las Vegas. They won at North Carolina. Of course, we all remember they beat Clemson, was number 5 in the nation. They beat a 10th ranked USC team, maybe in a second year. And then going on the road to A&M, which everybody kind of heralded as just like this incredibly difficult game and tough place to play, and then the three losses are inexplicable in the mixed up in all that. Marshall, Stanford, and now Northern Illinois. I don't know what it is. And like Pat said, it's kind of like the first season with Marshall and Stanford, you thought, oh, maybe this is like a young, early, you know, early in his tenure coach, just trying to still find his way. But man, I mean, last year's Louisville blowout in this year now, the Northern Illinois game, are just complete head scratchers. And you just, when you're the Notre Dame coach, you can't lose these games. You can't continue to lose these games. After the A&M game and the win, I think everybody looked at Notre Dame's schedule and thought, oh goodness, right? This is like set up for them to grab that playoff berth. Grab one of those 7 at large spots, and boom, very next game, they're just not ready, and offensively just completely inept offensively. There's a clip kind of going viral that kind of sums it up, sums the Notre Dame offense up and Riley Leonard's day up. And it's a multiple route, you know, pass play, and two guys are just wide open. And Riley Leonard goes for the long ball in a double covered situation and gets intercepted. That was late in the game. That basically cost them the game. So it's just bad. It's all around bad. But it's also, again, I cannot think of a program that had such good wins when you look at their ranked wins and such in such bad losses. Like I can't think of a team that's over 2 or 3 year stretch had such highs and lows. It's crazy.
Yeah, that is it. I think the problem was everyone looked at the schedule and said, hey, Notre Dame's going to playoff, including Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to guard against this. This is, you know, this is why, for whatever, Nick Saban would come in and say, well, Middle Tennessee State, they got 14 future NFL Hall of Famers. And they, I mean, this is quality, you know, and everyone kind of laugh and they beat him 63-3 or something. But it was like, this is it. This is the rat poison. I don't know what's going on inside the Notre Dame program. I don't know what. I have two questions. One is, how does a committee, because we haven't seen this, okay? How does a committee factor a loss like this? Notre Dame does not have, I can win my conference, right? But they could easily end up 11-1. They could end up 10-2. I mean, you'd still look at the schedule, and there's nothing on this schedule that says unwinnable. USC at the end would be the hardest game. Louisville would be interesting. Everyone out, Florida State obviously is falling apart. Everything's winnable. So they could be 10-2, but they have a Northern Illinois loss. And I don't know that we really considered, this happens in basketball, right? People, they blew that game early in the year. How will a committee factor that? I guess you always thought about it like, well, what if you lose to Georgia and Alabama and your three loss SEC team or your four loss, like, well, what if it's a terrible loss? What do you think, right, Pat?
Yeah, no, I think it's a fascinating question, a premise that we're going to find out. You know, we're going to have to wait quite a while till we get that first click of the rankings from the committee. But, you know, in the four-team playoff, you lose to a MAC school, you're done. 12 team obviously is going to be different, but there's probably still going to be a penalty attached to that. Now, if Northern Illinois goes 13-0 and wins the MAC and gets the group of five spot, maybe this doesn't look so bad at all. But lacking, as you pointed out, the chance to win a conference championship, and now you may wish, gosh, I wish we had a couple more big fish on the schedule to beat that would help our resume. You wish Florida State were better. I think Notre Dame's up against it. They certainly, I think they absolutely have to win out to be 11-1 and then hope the one loss doesn't look that bad. If they're 10-2, I don't, with a MAC loss, I think you're in trouble.
Yeah, it probably would depend on that second loss, right? Like if USC starts rolling pretty good and they end up like knocking off, or they end up losing to USC in a close game or something, you could maybe see it. But it's tough. It's tough to look at a 10-2 Notre Dame team with a loss at home to Northern Illinois and give them one of the seven at large spots. That would be difficult. 11-1, I would guess that they probably are in, right? Unless it's like a wild circumstance where you have a bunch of 11-1 or 10-2 teams bunched up together.
But I think, I agree. I think 11-1 gets you in. 10-2, if the loss is to a USC team that is in the field. But I don't know how you really overcome it, especially when your schedule is not panning out. And this is the one thing Notre Dame has, is some years the schedule's crush is unbelievable, and some years, well, hey, that Florida State game seemed like a big deal. Well, it's not anymore. Or probably isn't going to be. So tough spot for the Irish. Let me just say this before we're going to get to Texas and some of these individual schools. But I look at this, we're 2 weeks in, and I don't know what's going to happen with this. This playoff to me has turned everything so interesting. All right. Georgia, sure. Love them. Crushed Clemson 2-0. Texas, we'll talk about them, but they look fantastic. Yesterday in Ann Arbor. Okay, love them. They're 2-0. Crush Michigan. Ohio State, I'm going to give the nod to. They haven't played anybody, but whatever. Well, I love those three. After that, I don't know. I would make a very good argument that Tennessee should be ranked fourth. Did an unbelievable job against North Carolina State. They look very, very good. But like some of the teams we would say would stack in there, Alabama needed a late run to put South Florida away. Penn State almost had their own MAC disaster. Oregon, they beat Boise State, which I think is going to be a quality win. They got bailed out by their special teams, all three phases. But, you know, this is not looking like, and then you got Ole Miss and Missouri, a lot of teams that haven't played anybody. Like, after the top three, we're gonna have a 12-team playoff. We got nine spots there. You look at the Big 12, right? Who the hell's winning that thing? Okay, like Iowa State and Arizona State start looking really good, right? They're playing well. We don't like. There's so much uncertainty that I just think it's going to be so much fun and interesting as this season plays out. Like Notre Dame might have just played themselves right out of this. What we looked at is sort of the playoffs. The 4-team playoff was always very orderly. It was just sort of like, well, there's the teams, and they're kind of in there, and it's inertia. And now I'm looking and going, I got no idea what's going to happen. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Fair?
No. Oh, yeah. Very fair. I'm fascinated at this point. And, you know, I've been in the 40-yard dash. I've been putting out my 1 through 12 seeds. And like Ross has done, I think, with his top 10, I'm not ranking anybody I'm not seeding anybody until you've played somebody. And so I'm not seeding Ohio State yet. And I'm not seeding Missouri. And I'm not seeding Ole Miss. And I'm not seeding Alabama. And so you start filling this thing out, and it's like, oh, my God, what a absolute wild thing it is at the moment. And this is going to be obviously an evolving thing as we get a little further into it. And then, you know, Ohio State will play somebody and win, and you can put them in. Right. But, like, right now, yes, I got Georgia 1, USC 2, Miami 3 seed, Utah 4, Texas 5, Tennessee 6, Boston College 7,
yeah,
Vanderbilt 8, Penn State 9, South Carolina 10, Iowa State 11, and Northern Illinois 12. Because who the hell knows at this point?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's what is? I think everybody came away Saturday with the "everybody sucks" kind of mantra, right? Because there were so many teams that we saw in Week 1 like had these hangovers in Week 2 against inferior competition. Either they lost or they just didn't look good. A good example is like Penn State, you know, as I mentioned earlier, or Oregon, even, you know, having struggles back-to-back weeks, especially on the offensive line. You can go down the list. I think Pat mentioned it, but like, you know, the Georgias and the USC has looked pretty good, but I mean, outside of a handful, there have been some things exposed from a lot of these teams, and maybe it's just early, right? It's early, and everybody's working out sort of the kinks and all that. But we're at the part of the schedule of everybody stinks or
got here quick. Stink. It got here quick.
That's right.
Really quick. Really quick. I mean, it's week 2, and yeah, I'm like, yeah, you know, well, all right, who do you believe in? I also wonder, and we will see, but it has certainly been my theory that everybody doesn't stink. It's everybody's kind of more equal. Playing time is such a factor that you don't have as many players, and the transfer portal is so easy that you don't have so much depth, or let alone just talent sitting on a depth chart. Instead, they're playing somewhere. And,
yeah,
you know, the quarterbacks particularly. Nobody's sitting around as the second, not very few. Pat and I were at the game with Arch Manning sitting there. And it's like, boy, if he had transferred over to Michigan last year, he'd be the starter. And, you know, like, there aren't a whole lot. What Michigan's going through this year with no quarterback used to be fairly common. But it's almost jarring to see now, because, like, why didn't you get somebody? Of course, Notre Dame got somebody, and he's throwing bad. You know, it's just I don't know that guys aren't just spread out, and you go, all right, how good is anybody anymore when you don't have that depth? It's going to be very interesting, but this is going to be really fascinating. All right, let's get to Texas, because Texas isn't just back. Texas is tough. That's the thing to me. Right after this break. So that break tease, Pat, that was pretty good.
That was impressive. That's pro work. Pro work.
Right? I think that was one of my better ones. I think I was.
Good job, Dan.
Yeah.
The audience retention metrics will be huge coming out of that break.
Through the roof.
Through the roof. I do believe it, though. Texas, to me, they go to Ann Arbor, 31-12. Game was not that close. The game was over like halfway through the first quarter. It's funny. I remember being at a Patriot game like this too. Michigan fan has watched three straight years of really good, like contending teams and then championship level teams. So they know what it looks like. And they watch the team and they're like, this isn't what it looks like. We're not winning this game. Like, people just kind of knew right away. Texas looks like it. We do not look like it. Texas looked terrific. And you could feel that sense in the stadium that this game was like not good. And everyone in burnt orange. Let me tell you what, I don't think television can do it justice. Pat and I were there at eyeballs. There's nothing like seeing 110,000 people dressed in either maize or burnt orange. Yeah. Two colors.
It's a bad combo.
It is an ugly, ugly color, ugly palette. Two colors that don't exist anywhere other than college. Like, you ever heard of those colors outside of college athletics?
No.
No, I think I'm going to have my house maize with a burnt orange trim. It was something else. It was like, oh, my God. And there were a lot of burnt orange there. And the Texas fans had a hell of a good weekend.
It was hard to see from TV, the color split.
Yeah.
Like, to me, you almost couldn't see any burnt orange. It was just all like this mash of like bright yellowish colors. So there's a lot of orange there, I guess.
There's a lot of orange.
There really was. Yeah.
I've been
a lot of Michigan people commenting like, wow, there's a lot of orange here.
That's more opposing fans than you will generally ever see there. Someone was saying maybe some Ohio State. Maybe those occasionally when like Michigan sucks and Ohio State's good. Right. Yeah. But I remember
I thought you were going to say Ohio State fans came to the game to watch
No. Well, they should have, because they would have had a hell of a time. They would have had a hell of a time.
That's why I laughed.
You showed up in your scarlet and gray. Perfect. And you drink the tequila with the Texas fans and then just laugh at your rivals. It'd be great. What a good day.
Yeah.
That's worth a trip up from, Dayton or something. Sure. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't see any Ohio State fans. But next time they should go. Anyway, there was they had a good time. But to me, this is a physically tough team. And what has always been the rub at Texas? They get all this talent and they're physically weak. Yeah. Anthony Hill Jr., linebacker, that is not a weak person. Okay.
No.
I dare you to tell him. Go walk right up to him. That guy, he hits. He gonna hit. He is tough. He is fantastic. The whole linebacking crew is fantastic. He said, we take pride in our physicality. We work out physical. We practice physical. Just everything. I think Sark maybe brings that from Alabama. But they were also mentally tough. Okay? They had some penalties. They shake it off. They shake off the crowd. Quinn Ewers never forces anything. Played a really smart, mentally tough game. 10 of 16 on third downs, third and long. We're not scared. I think it's a physically, mentally tough team. Texas is back. Texas has been back. They went to the playoff last year. They're in the Final Four. But I think they're tough. I think without question, that old bit is gone, or at least it looks like it's gone, or it looked gone Saturday in Ann Arbor.
Pat? 100% agree. Yes, that they. They were the more physical team. And yeah, that didn't necessarily shock me. Maybe the degree of it was surprising, because Michigan, frankly, has been like the nation's capital of physical football for the last couple of years. And they just went in and said, no, we are stronger than you are. But like last year, they were a very, very strong, tough team. So I was not, I think they kind of put to rest anybody that said they were soft. But they executed so well. Like you said, the third downs, and Ewers just, never being rattled and just making the smart plays on third down, stepping up when he needed to, throwing guys open. Tight end Gunnar Helm had a great game. Everybody came in talking about Colston Loveland. He had a better game than Loveland. He had a better quarterback, too. Yeah. But
Loveland had a hell of a game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he did have that one unforced fumble. That was not good. But Texas was a complete team, and I think they are a complete team. They have overcome two major running back injuries. They got three other guys that ran well for them. They may not have a 20 carry guy who can go inside and then also break 50-yard runs, but I think they've got enough at running back, along with very good receivers, a really good offensive line, and then the whole defense is good. So I think outside of Georgia, they're the second most impressive team I've seen so far.
You know, there was a lot of hype around, you know, that offensive line. In I think they return four or five starters, like over 120 career starts. They've got a left tackle who's probably going to go in the top 10 of the draft, and Kelvin Banks has started every game since his freshman year. And man, they backed up the hype, and they pushed around a Michigan front that, you know, was supposed to be one of the best in football and has a couple of first rounders itself. So that really stuck out to me is the physicality in the trenches, in seeing that O-line do what it did and push around. And then, of course, you know, observations from the other side. As we saw in Michigan's season opener, they've got a long way to go here offensively. And it's seemed like quite a struggle to move the football. And Texas's front obviously is one of the best in the country. It is. But now we've seen that a couple of weeks in a row now from Michigan. And Dan, I was wondering, texting with some Michigan people during the game, like there's a few teams out there. I decided not to go in the portal for a quarterback over the offseason, or maybe went in the portal but didn't, or were interested but didn't get anybody. You know, Auburn comes to mind. We saw what happened there. And Michigan is the other one that comes to mind. These big universities that you would think would be able to afford to go out and get a quarterback did not. Again, whether that's their choice or not, maybe they just didn't. They missed out on some guys. Auburn did, I know. But yeah, they would imagine Michigan and Auburn and those teams with you know, Arch Manning or something.
Yeah. Michigan, I think I said it last year, and then Andy Staples and I were joking about it, talking about it. The guy they should have got was Kyle McCord.
Mm.
It would have been just for us media vultures. The greatest thing ever if a guy gets booted out of Ohio State, amazing. Or vice versa, by the way. If someone gets booted out of Michigan, goes to Ohio State, beats Michigan, or like, fantastic. Listen, they should have got the portal. They should have found a way to get Dante Moore to come back to the Michigan from UCLA. Mm. They didn't. Here's what was going on during the portal, because this is part of the problem is the portal timing, but it's uniquely it's not really a problem. It was a problem for Michigan, who in December last year was dealing with Harbaugh was going to leave, but he couldn't say he was going to leave until someone actually offered him a job. Nobody knew who was going to take over. There was the Connor Stallions chaos. They were in the playoff. The whole place was like pointing fingers at it. It was a total disaster. That the only thing that was saving them was, well, let's just go win the national championship. So the idea of like, hey, we need to set up for next year, I think those guys were living like minute by minute. It was total, right? So Michigan is paying the piper for that. Because like a properly run program, and maybe in a different scenario, if Harbaugh was like, yeah, I have no NFL interest, and this was we aren't getting getting suspended twice in one season and still investigated by the NCAA. Like he got suspended twice and still had open cases. it's like double jeopardy was going down. He would have said, listen, we got to get a quarterback in here because this ain't doing it. And yeah, they're probably not getting Kyle McCord, although boy, it would have been funny. That would have been funny. But
and he looks quite good, doesn't he? In upstate New York.
He is playing phenomenal for Syracuse. Yeah. And I have said I'm rooting also for Will Howard to do really well, but Kyle McCord I'm rooting for because it's tough. Like there's always this hit. The players have no loyalty. They just jump out. Like that's a kid that got run off.
Yep.
He was the starter. He took him to 11-0. Like there was an interception. Did Maserati Marv really fight for that ball? As an injury, you know, like, and I'm not saying Ryan Day isn't right. He knows a hell of a lot more about quarterbacking than I do, and he certainly knows the thing. but it's a tough one when you just get, hey, thanks for being the starter and winning the first 11 games, but you're gone. So I'm rooting for him. But anyway, yeah, Michigan doesn't have a quarterback. And can they get there? I don't know. I think this is like a 8-4 team. I mean, they still have Oregon, USC, and Ohio State. Are they beating those teams? And I'm not sure about Oregon. I mean, look at, they still have Illinois. They're at Illinois. Illinois has had a nice win over Kansas.
Yeah. Michigan State.
Michigan just had a nice State win. looked great against Maryland. And that kid they've got, Nick Marsh, their freshman receiver, is a big time player. And those, you know, you start looking at the thing and you're not just going win, 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 like you might have a year ago, 2 years ago, and then say, okay, maybe you lose to Ohio State, maybe you lose. No, I don't think you're getting, I'm not sitting there saying this Michigan team's going to walk into Illinois and don't worry about it. I'd say that's going to be a hell of a ball game. And Michigan State's always a hell of a ball game. For all of Michigan's success, Michigan State, Michigan last 10 years, 5-5.
Yes.
You know, let's not, you know, it is what it is. So, yeah, they should have got a, they got it. What did you think, Pat, of the Wolverines quickly?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're accurate in terms of saying that they were all in on trying to win that national title with a lot of other distractions that prevented anybody from, I think, spending 5 minutes to think about what 2024 was going to look like. You know,
it's like everyone was retaining lawyers. I mean, there's like, there's no time.
I think that it was purely, let's go win the title and then we'll figure it the hell out. And they're not figuring it out all that well yet, but it was predictable, I think, coming out of that. And I think there's probably a hangover there about like what LSU experienced in 2020 after they won their title in 2019 when they were all in on that team. And then 2020 comes, it's like, I guess we got to go field another team. We're not that good. This kind of looks like that. It may not be. I think LSU ended up like 5-5 that year. They were not good at all. I don't think it's going to be that bad for Michigan, but they're undermanned and just don't look like they've been constructed with a whole lot of thought spent on this season, which I get.
17 starters gone, your head coach, your defensive coordinator, and 13 of them to the NFL. I mean, it is what it is. I look and say, boy, you go 8-4. That's not too bad for this group. Maybe they can do better. I don't know. But I wouldn't count any game where you're just like, okay, got that. Remember, like last year, I remember it was just like, oh, they're going to be 9-0. They're going to be like this. We'll see. All right. A couple really big results. Let's just get to that and spread it around. Shade Beamer off the canvas, man. All of a sudden, 2 years ago, greatest thing ever at South Carolina. And then last year, now he's on the hot seat. Hey, man, he walks into Kentucky this year, 31-6, just absolute drubs the Wildcats. Great defense. They're coming off a 5-7 season, but there's a lot of potential here, and South Carolina could be the kind of team that just kind of steps up and surprises you with what they've got. It's a little bit of portal. It's all that. Lenora Seller, nice game at quarterback. A lot there. Ross, did you watch that one?
I did. A little bit of it here and there. I mean, there were a lot of unexpected results from Saturday, like there always are. But this is up there. Did not expect South Carolina to come out and absolutely dominate Kentucky. And we were talking, I think we've been talking most of the offseason, right, about Kentucky being kind of a sleeper. And man, just an absolute dominating performance from South Carolina. I think Shane Beamer was talking to media Sunday night about the game in like a follow-up news conference or something, and he mentioned what a week can do. You know, how many changes and just everything a new week can bring. Because you guys remember they struggled against, I don't remember who it was last week.
Old Dominion, right?
Old Dominion. He struggled against Old Dominion, and I think there were plenty of people fearing that this was not going to be a very solid Gamecocks team, and then they go on the road and beat Kentucky. Pat, there was a stat out there. Kentucky's lost like a lot of, like maybe 8 of 10 SEC home games in a row, you know, or something like 8 of the last 10 SEC home games they've lost something like that. I saw it this morning come across, but it's something pretty wild. But I did not expect this from South Carolina, and it was Sellers looked incredible, and then on the in the opposite right, Brock Vandegrift, 3 of 10 for 30 yards. Every time I looked up, it was he was either running for his life or it was an incompletion.
Yeah, it's that I will say, one of us went lone cock in the race for the case. One of us did. I'm the cock of the walk, baby. Got that one.
Fact, we had to hear the words lone cock again. I forgot about that. I tried to wipe that out. I tried to put that out of my memory. I should have been rooting for the CATS, cats. If only for that.
Instead, no, cocky. Get cocky, man. Great win for them. And that's, I picked them because Shane Beamer has a way. He finds some upsets and he pulls them off. And this seemed like a classic Beamer upset there. And yeah, for Kentucky, it's bad. And here's the deal for Mark Stoops. Now, I believe they've lost 7 out of their last 8 SEC games. I'm not sure about the home game stat.
Yeah, I found it. I found it. So since the 2021 loss to, since the 2021 win over LSU, this is from Tom Hart, by the way. Kentucky has lost 8 of its last 10 SEC home games since that win over LSU in 2021. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's bad. So they finished the season last year very poorly, other than they salvaged it by beating Louisville. That's the last thing Mark Stoops really has going for him over the last couple of years, is he's beaten Louisville reliably. But things have turned a bit. This isn't quite the Calipari unrest in Kentucky, but there's some similarities here. Mark Stoops is making $9 million a year, and he's 15-13 over the last 2+ seasons. They're not delivering, and he tried to leave. He tried to go to Texas A&M. So the fans are like, fine, if you don't want to be here, take your $9 million rear end and go, because we're not getting much bang for the buck at this point. So that was a bad home loss there, and they've got to turn it around, and they've gone rent a QB, and they brought in 2 guys, not just Brock Vandegrift, but Gavin Wimsatt, who had been at Rutgers, and so far neither of them can throw the football. So Kentucky's got major, major work to do, and Georgia's coming to town next week.
All right, we'll be back right after this with Coach Prime. My throws to break are just on point, Pat. On point.
You're
on two
fire.
Two for two.
A little better than sort of a broadcasting award.
A little better than the Colorado offensive line.
Whew. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened at Nebraska. What did that end? 28-10?
28-10, yeah.
Colorado defense better than the offense. Didn't see that coming. That offensive line is not good, and they could not handle Nebraska. Great night for Nebraska. What a scene. Absolute party out there in Lincoln. Man, that program's got some energy behind it. You got this hot shot, Patrick Mahomes looking look-alike quarterback, legacy guy. You got the balloons flying. Like, on the right weather, Nebraska is as great a place to see a game as you'll ever get. And they just handed it to Colorado. And, you'd think Prime would have spent more time building the offensive line, if only to save his own son.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know where they go with here. I don't know how good they're going to be. I haven't known at all. But pretty much what everyone warned them about is kind of here. This isn't 7-on-7 ball.
That's exactly what I was going to say, that they could win a 7-on-7 national championship. Unfortunately, they don't play that. So they're last in the nation in rushing. They don't even try to run the ball, which only adds to people teeing off on Shadur. It is a problem when you're that bad on the line of scrimmage, really on both sides. Their defense did bow up, but it's not a great defense by any stretch. I think Nebraska left some points on the field while scoring 28. So the Colorado is definitely got some work cut out for them, and I just don't know how much better you can get when your line is that big a mess.
Right. I mean, this was the thing. Yeah, we talked about the really easy things, blocking and tackling. They seem to have a problem with. And I think everybody kind of knew that that would be the undoing, which is, I think, why we all picked the Huskers to cover, I think, because you just kind of knew that they weren't going to be able to keep pace in the trenches, and they didn't. And it's like they had this off season where he brought in, you know, a lot of the new, he replaced, cycled out all the linemen, or a lot of the linemen, and it doesn't seem like it's working. Maybe Ari Wasserman of On3. He tweeted out a pretty funny photo. It was a garbage bag, and the fabric of the garbage bag was Louie. He said, yeah, got the Louie.
Yeah.
Curbside, pick it up.
I will say, they signed the five-star lineman Jordan Seaton, and they've just kind of thrown him into the fire. Yeah. He's starting as an 18, 19-year-old guy out there, and that you're probably asking too much of an offensive tackle, especially when the guys around him are no good. So, you know, that's kind of the state that they're in. They tried to quick fix a line, and that's hard to do.
That was a great signing, and he's a talented kid. You can see that, and he's probably going to be a great player. But they got him, like, oh, well, we got this guy. Like, he's a freshman, man. You didn't sign a free agent in the NFL. Like, you need a bunch of those. You need 10 offensive linemen on your roster, 12 guys. You need to recruit, and they never run them off. Build them up. You just need the size. So not good for Colorado. Great night for Nebraska. All right. Give me a result before we get to some of the other stuff. Give me a result that popped out at you. Let's try to get a few more teams mentioned in here. Pat.
Yeah. Ross, you mentioned briefly there, Dan, but Tennessee just absolutely dog walking North Carolina Fantastic. State. Yeah. That was super impressive to me. Nico Iamaleava looks fantastic. Their running game was very good. They got after the passer. That's a pretty scary-looking team right now. Obviously, a long way to go and a difficult schedule, but Tennessee has got the parts, I would say, to make this SEC one more piece to make the SEC really interesting. They go at Oklahoma September 21st, and as of right now, I'd say Oklahoma better get a lot better for that game. So my eyes are on Tennessee for sure.
Yeah, Sooners don't look good. Real quick, Sark was saying in the SEC, you got to have the big line guys, and then you need to win in space. Tennessee has both of those things. Like, they've got both of those things right now. So that's good. Ross, who popped for you?
Yeah, you mentioned the Sooners. I mean, I didn't expect the struggle that Oklahoma had against Houston. It was ended up being 16-12. That was a head scratcher. I'm not exactly sure what is going on there in Norman, but yeah, better get better 2 weeks from now, as y'all mentioned, Tennessee visits. That was one of the ones that stuck out to me. But I think going into last week or going into this past weekend's games, I said that you wanted to see something out of the Clemson offense after the Georgia game, and boy, they just whipped App State. I think they set a record in the first quarter. A scoring record. They ended up with 66 points, and I didn't watch a whole lot of the game, but the stats are good. So Dabo's back. Dan, buy stock in little old Clemson.
You were right about that. Ah, the sweet, sweet sounds of Hooray for Ames. Drink that tap water, baby. Cyclones beat the Hawkeyes. The Cyhawk. What's not to love? 2-0. Matt Campbell's team is back. I said on Friday I was interested to see which one was going to do this.
Yep.
It should have been Iowa, quite frankly. They led 13 zip.
Yeah.
Twice they have first and goal at the one. They end up with two field goals. Oh, yep. Boy. An Iowa tradition greater than the third quarter wave or whatever, that the first quarter wave at the kids in the hospital. Fell apart late. Rocco Becht Iowa State quarterback comes in and there was a 75-yard touchdown pass to Jalen Noel, and final minute again to Noel, a big thing. They kicked a 54-yarder. Look, Iowa State's won two of the last three against their rivals. Terrific win. Matt Campbell's a great coach. This is a good program, and they're an X factor in the Big 12. And this was just this has got to feel about as good as it gets for the Cyclones, because not a lot of expectations. Probably should have lost, but they toughed it out, won the game that maybe they didn't count on in Iowa City. Very impressed with what Iowa State did. We got to be painful for the Hawkeye fans.
Yeah. How many times does Iowa lose up 19-7, up two scores, late in the third quarter? I mean, just defensively, they've been so good. That was shocking to see the big 75-yarder and then march down for the couple of field goals there. That was something we just don't see very often from the Hawkeyes. And now it's back to the old drawing board, I guess, on offense.
No, it's the same board. It's the same board.
Nothing ever changes.
When was the last time?
3 yards.
Yeah. What was the last time we saw somebody in the Cy-Hawk game run 75 yards in a row?
Oh, my God.
I mean, it just doesn't – not really seeing that too often.
No,
wait a minute. Is that allowed?
I tell you what, we kept on with the scoring. Remember, I said the winner of this game averages 17 points the last like 5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, they hit 20. There you go. As long as you could eclipse 17.
And I was the last five times Iowa State had won, been 3 points or less. Make it six. Mm-hmm. No, make it six. Yeah. But that, it's pretty shocking to see a Phil Parker defense give that one up. But hey, the Hawks are winless with Kirk Ferentz and undefeated without Kirk Ferentz. Oh. Maybe he's the problem.
There you go.
Wow.
That must be it. All right. We've said some mean things like that. Talk about the outlaw Kirk Ferentz like that. Can we say something nice? Can you atone, Pat, and say something nice here?
I sure can. Legitimately nice. I want to say something nice about Cam Scadabo and the Arizona State Sun Devils.
Hell yeah.
Who absolutely got after Mississippi State. They were physical. They were fired up. That was an incredibly intense performance by them. They nearly blew it at the end. They got up and then Mississippi State came back. So kudos Mississippi State for at least coming back, because they were absolutely knocked on their behinds for a while in that game. But Cam Scadabo, running back for Arizona State, 33 carries, 262 yards. I think he had 160 something at halftime, and he was just knocking people over. I mean, that was like Earl Campbell running the ball. It was not ducking and dodging. That was going through the defense. Very impressive by him. Very impressive by ASU. Kenny Dillingham, second year. Last year was pretty much a washout. This year it looks like he's got some attitude going and a few more players. And another team in the Big 12 that's like, it's not going to be easy when you're playing the Sun Devils. Even though their helmets were terrible. The giant Sun Devil head. That was a little bit much.
That Kenny Dillingham has got that program moving. Energy, potential. I saw a great stat by Doug Tamaro, the longtime SID out there. First game where more than 10,000 students attended back-to-back two games in a row. First time. Wow. So they got their student section, 10,000 plus in there. It is like 1,000 degrees in Phoenix right now, even at like 10 o'clock at night. So he has got energy there. And if they can get that to stay, you push around an SEC team. I don't care if it's Mississippi State. I don't care who you do. This was big for Arizona State.
What's who's the ESPN sideline guy? He was on the sideline in a suit and tie that cut off sleeves. It was so hot. It was like 100 degrees down there on the field.
Come to Detroit for the good weather. Don't go to Arizona. Better weather up here. Much better weather. Yeah. Ross, say something nice.
I've got something legitimately nice to say as well. We talked about a few of these games, but I'm going to talk about the conferences. How about the Big 12 in the ACC? We often think of them, obviously, in this era of college football as the little brothers to the Big Ten and SEC. And they virtually have the same record as far as non-conference power, power conference, power team games. In this past weekend, we saw a bunch of Big 12 over Big Ten and SEC. We saw a few ACC over Big Ten and SEC. So you mentioned, Pat mentioned Arizona State over Mississippi State. Oklahoma State beat Arkansas, even though maybe they shouldn't have. That was an insane game and a litany of mistakes by Arkansas, but they won. We talked about Iowa State over Iowa. So those are the Big 12 games. ACC, Duke over Northwestern. Pitt came back, roared back to beat Cincinnati. Of course, that's a Big 12 team. But and then, of course, Cal and Auburn, mentioned it earlier. That was the one of the more shocking upsets. By the way, the conference record, these are conference records for each of the power leagues against other power opponents. ACC is 5-5. Big 12 is 5-5. They lead the Big Ten and SEC. Big Ten is 4-4. SEC is 5-6. Gasp! It just means more, as the Cal social media team tweeted out after the Auburn win. It just means more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, Cal is rolling since I said they didn't have any fans. I feel responsible for this. Yeah. That was a great win. Yeah. Beat Auburn.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something nice about Bryant Vincent, who is the head coach at Louisiana Monroe, ULM. And he used to be assistant coach. He was a coordinator under Bill Clark at UAB. When UAB came back from, I don't know, what did they do? They got disbanded and then they returned, and Bill Clark was the head coach, and they built up this a bunch of really good seasons, 11-win season, a couple of 9 wins. They made UAB football matter. And Clark had to retire for health concerns after 2021. They promote Bryant Vincent. He takes over in 2022, goes 7-6. They do not retain him. Instead, they hire Trent Dilfer. And in like one of the more awkward bits, they hire Trent Dilfer while Bryant Vincent is still coaching the bowl team that's going to a bowl. They technically shared an office for 2.5 weeks. It's like a 70s sitcom or something. They both were like, no, you have the office. You have the office. He could have turned that into some real laugh track gags. But anyway, they played each other on Saturday, and Louisiana Monroe won 32-6. So the guy that UAB didn't want came back, beat the guy they did 32-6. And
that's good.
That's got to feel pretty good for Bryant Vincent and Louisiana Monroe. I'm always in favor of the scorned guy.
Yeah, that one was, I'm sure, quite personal. Not with Trent Dilfer, but with the administration of UAB on the other sideline.
Yeah,
for sure.
So I did this backwards. We're supposed to do small sample Heisman first, then say something.
Whatever. Are there rules? Dan, you can't be perfect. We're not perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Are there rules? Now, see, I did so well on my breaks that I got arrogant. I was like Notre Dame.
Yeah,
I was like Notre Dame.
That's it. You got the big head. Didn't pay attention to the details, and now here we are.
We're screwed
total
up.
Total chaos.
So now we're doing small sample Heisman. We'll end the show with small sample Heisman. Pat Forty, do you have someone to win the Heisman?
I do. Hadn't played anybody yet, but holy moly, what Jackson Dart did Saturday. He completed his first 24 passes, SEC record, and was 25 of 27 for the game. 92.6% completion percentage against Middle Tennessee. For the season, through two games, he's completing 87% of his passes, 47 out of 54. He's thrown 6 touchdowns and 7 incompletions for the year so far. So Jackson Dart, who could end up in the large sample Heisman mix when all is said and done, but off to a blistering start at Ole Miss. It'll get a little more real next week against Wake Forest, but fine start to the season for him.
So I'm gonna pick one that we haven't discussed, but I think is noteworthy because we talked a lot about the Gators of Florida last week, and they started, you know, DJ Lagway, the kind of five-star freshman, and he put up incredible numbers. Now it was against Samford, and I know that, but I think it's notable, and maybe this is the guy who can at least bring excitement to this season, and maybe even the Gators could go on a run with this kid. He was 18 of 25, 456 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, an incredible performance, and he found a lot of receivers too. They were like five, you know, like seven receivers with like at least 40 yards. So I didn't get to watch a whole lot of the game, but I saw a few clips, and I don't know, you know, can he salvage, at least bring the Gators fans some excitement for the future?
Yeah. So whether do they play it, keep them, or do they go back to Graham Mertz? I don't know. I'm gonna give my small sample Heisman. We mentioned him. He could have won it last week too when he had six touchdowns. He could win the Heisman. I don't know that there's a better football player in America than Ashton Gentry of Boise State. Now, unfortunately, this Oregon-Boise State game was on Peacock because it was awesome. It was one of the best games of the season. Gentry had a 70-yard touchdown. Oregon had an 85-yard punt return and a 100-yard, well, 99-yard touchdown, kickoff return run and then like one-inch fumble into the end zone. But whatever. Like, this was just a fantastic football game. Oregon won the game at the end. But Gentry had 192 yards, three touchdowns. They know it's going to him. You cannot stop him. He was a first-team All-American last year. He stayed at Boise. They no doubt have money there, too. It's not like every – like, they got money in Boise. It's a city's growing. They got a thing. And they kept him. And this kid is absolutely fantastic. He could win the – we'll see how it goes. But, like, he should be a candidate for the real Heisman. This isn't just a thing. This is a great a college football player. He was tremendous in a great
– dude is a stud.
Fantastic yeah. game. Oregon's offense got bailed out by special teams.
Yeah.
Bailed out because yeah. This could be really ugly. They do not have a line. Dylan Gabriel got
sacked. Some big questions for the Ducks.
Big questions. But we'll get to answering that. Also, if next year, just set a reminder for your fantasy football draft in the NFL, draft Ashton Gentry. There's your fantasy advice.
Right.
No fantasy kidding. Advice. You know, do you guys know we have a pod team?
Oh, tell the listeners
we're in a league.
About that.
Yeah, I think it's tough. Yeah, we're in a league with the other Yahoo podcasts. And College Football Inquirer, I decided to try an unorthodox system where I tried to just draft college legends. We have a lot of Heisman winners. We have like five quarterbacks. I don't think we need Bryce Young. I think we have Joe Burrow. We didn't get Lamar. I got Devonta Smith. I also got Stetson Bennett because he won two titles. I have a lot of quarterbacks on the team. Chuba Hubbard.
Wasn't our draft grade was like a D or something?
F. I think we got an F.
F. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, they wrote up a little thing saying you will finish last in the league. We'll see. Don't write off. We got Stetson Bennett, Michael Meyer, Brock Bowers, Blake Corum. I mean, that's a hell of a team there. Devonta Smith.
If this were college.
If this was college. We went and said, no, we're not trying to win this thing in your little rules. We're going to win it our way. We're like Coach Prime. We're going to go with the college stars. They were all available. I couldn't get Derrick Henry. That was my problem.
Yeah.
Everybody but that. And I tried to trade for him. Didn't work. So we may lose them all. We may lose them all. But we're a college pod. And we're going to be true to who we are. And if I got to start Stetson Bennett, I'm starting Stetson Bennett.
I think you should consider it.
See, Burrow didn't do so well today. They lost, it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Burrow did nothing. Burrow was
So could have played Stetson Bennett. Yeah. What do we know? There's a lot of competition. That's the problem with picking only Heismans. You just end up with all quarterbacks. Yeah. Anyway, next year, Genty's coming with us.
There you go. Come on.
All right. That's our show. We'll be back Tuesday. Discuss more. Also, we got a lot going on. We'll get to it. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media. Appreciate you spending some time with us. Talk to you.